Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerdy stuff way too much. Today, we're doing something a little bit different. We are going live. So some of you are listening on the audio version. Just so you know, this was recorded live on YouTube. So we're going to take a little bit of input from people along the way. But Griffin, how you doing?
Other than dealing with faulty internet and which has just cost me a lot of stress the past 2 days, I'm doing all right. You know, if it looks like I look like one of the vampires from Twilight, it's because I literally have a giant window in front of my face and it's overcast, and so the overcast light is making me look like Edward Cullen from Twilight. But you know, some people probably like that. So. Yeah,
for some of you listening, it's like his face is just blue. There's no warmth at all. No, it's just full Edward Cullen right now for the video version of this. So today we're going to go into a whole bunch of different stuff. As we were prepping this, because all days blend together while we're in lockdown, I actually wasn't sure what happened. And then I was like, hey, Griffin, what happened in the world of movie news? And then he mentioned, I was like, oh yeah, a ton of stuff's happened. But all of days have kind of combined together for me. So we're going to talk about this Ezra Miller news where he assaulted a fan, supposedly. Disney shuffling all their release dates. AMC might be filing bankruptcy. The Extraction trailer, that's the new Netflix original starring Chris Hemsworth that was written by Joe Russo of the Russo brothers. We've got South by Southwest is heading to Amazon. We're talking about a new writer for Ant-Man 3, as well as a new writer for the Obi-Wan Kenobi Disney Plus original series. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff that is headed your way over the next who knows how long we're going to be talking. For those that are watching live right now, thank you so much. And if you're listening to the audio version, be sure to leave a review, a rating, all that fun stuff. While we're in these first few months of launching, it helps out a ton to kind of get that early momentum and get us to kind of rank higher up on the charts. With that said, let's go ahead and get started with our first subject of the day. So Ezra Miller, the guy who plays the Flash, a video came out. It's only 7 seconds long. And in the video, he goes, basically, it's him and there's a lady in front of him. And he says, so you want to fight? He then reaches, grabs her throat. She's smiling in all of this. And then he throws her to the ground. And as this is happening, the guy filming goes, wait, bro, stop. And apparently from all the reports, what happened was that a group of somewhat eager fans were approaching him and he did not respond well to it. And so they're just overzealous fans, acting probably inappropriate, not respecting his boundaries. And they decide to really kind of, I guess they were joking about wanting to fight with him. So he goes, you want to fight? Grabs her by the throat, takes her to the ground. And then he was escorted out of the bar. Like, it wasn't just a joke. Yeah. There was a lot of speculation that he was just joking around. But whatever happened, he was not happy, and he was escorted out afterwards. So, legitimately, this was not a good situation. So, based off this first piece of information, not good. Not a good look.
No.
And we're talking about a project that has had a lot of trouble. I mean, they literally, about every 3-4 months, they cycle through a new writer, they cycle through a new director, and this has been a troubled production that they just cannot get momentum going for this deal. So one more thing.
On the Flash, want to clarify, because I don't think you said Flash at the beginning.
Good call. So we're talking about the actor playing the Flash did all this, and so one thing I'll throw out there, and before I throw you for your take on this one, one of the previous people that was attached to write and direct, John Francis Daley, who he did Game Night a couple years back. I thought a really good little comedy from, I believe that was last year, 2 years ago. And then he did some of the script writing on the Spider-Man Homecoming. Mm-hmm. He was attached to write and direct this deal. So after this news broke of Ezra Miller, the Flash, choking fan, throwing her to the ground, he tweets out, this is the whole tweet, creative differences. Just tweets out creative differences, no explanation. So everyone, of course, is assuming he's saying the reason that he left the project, the reason that he was off, is creative differences, poking fun at like, nah, man, what you just saw, him losing his temper, choking fan to the ground, this is not out of the ordinary. This is what creative differences meant when he left. So Griffin, what should they do with the Flash? Recast, cancel the project? What do we do?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's really easy. When the video first came out, I mean, like, I showed it to a few people, and they didn't even believe it was real, which right. I think is pretty indicative of just, like, the video in general. Like, it looks like he might be joking around with them. Even still, it's kind of, like, a weird way of joking around with, like, random people you just met. But, like, I don't know. Maybe they, like, asked him to do that. So you see this stuff, and it's like, okay, well, what really happened? And then the Variety article comes out where it's like, oh no, he actually just like choked this girl out. Like it, like they did not want him to do this. This was like very, very bad. And so, yeah, no, fuck that guy, man. Like he needs to go. Like, I will say that I have from people that I know who have either come in contact with him or have heard other stories from people. He doesn't have the greatest reputation as a person. Like, he's kind of a douche. And this is
pretty much in line with
that. Yeah. No. So, it's unfortunate, because, you know, once again, this film is going to be plagued by production issues. This one is just like, definitely out of the hands of like the creative forces involved, but let me get this out of the way. I really feel for the people involved, and Ezra Miller should leave the project. I was never really convinced it was going to happen with him anyways.
Right.
It just felt like they were dragging something out longer than it should have. And I was actually never really a big fan of his Flash to begin with. I just think it was a terrible casting choice. I think Ezra Miller is good when he's in those like indie films, films like Perks of Being a Wallflower and stuff like that, which is funny because I just rewatched that and then this news came out. And then you see like a bunch of memes going up and it's like, oh, someone called him nothing or whatever from the film. So like that was funny. But The Flash, I think, is pretty safe to say he's done with. What I'm more curious about is Fantastic Beasts, what they're going to do going forth with his character, because he's pretty integral to the plot of that film. Do they recast? Do they just write the character out altogether in the third one? People have brought up the point that Johnny Depp is still in those films. And to that, I will say, well, these are two completely different cases, because in one case, Johnny Depp was falsely accused, and then they kind of backtracked on it, and then they basically came to the realization that, oh, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard were really just both terrible people in a terrible relationship, and it was both of their faults.
Right.
With this, you can clearly see that Ezra Miller is 100% at fault and like should definitely be removed from the project. So I don't know. What do you think is going to happen with Fantastic Beasts? That to me is just, that's the more interesting thing here.
I think they're going to move forward with Fantastic Beasts. I think they're just, if they move forward with Johnny Depp years ago when they were in the middle of all the bad claims, they're not going to worry about weird little incident. They're just too much into it. And then he's not the face of Fantastic Beasts. He's prominent, but he's not the face of it. And so I don't think that they would probably mess with that one too much. But as for The Flash, this project has just been doomed for a while. Like, there's just no traction at all. And as soon as you start having this just cycle of every 6 months, there's something broken inside of it. There's something there that just, it's not working. And so it's not terribly surprising that the thing eventually kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
And now we know, have a better idea of probably what that was. But, you know, they lose the pre-production of all the stuff they've been trying to do. But they're early enough in it that there's just no reason to move forward with someone that, like, he's not well liked in this role because he doesn't get a cameo in one thing and then he's in a movie that's not particularly liked. There's just no reason to have strong loyalty to them. They're trying to do more standalone stories, so it's not like the continuity. People would be upset about the continuity if they swapped them out. So, you know, I think just shoot the horse, put it out of its misery. We need to stop trying to go down this path. Whatever's going on with this guy, get the help that he needs to kind of clear things up. But, you know, even Fantastic Beasts, that, you know, I don't, I guess it's going to happen, but it's another one of those ones that the last one didn't do very well. It's not particularly right. well liked, and they pushed it back a year, and so who knows what will even end up happening with that one. But
the thing I will say that Fantastic Beasts does have going for it now is that I think they're bringing back Steve Kloves, who wrote the original Potter films. Mm-hmm. And really, when okay. you look at those movies, he's the integral piece that makes those films work. Like, he was missing from Order of the Phoenix, and I think that film is by and large the worst film out of the series. So, like, you bring back the guy who wrote the Potter films, you put J.K. Rowling in like a George Lucas spot where she's not writing the films, but she's definitely involved with the big story, and I think the films will get a lot better, because that's ultimately been my biggest issue. So maybe he can find a way to write out Ezra Miller, maybe they just recast, but I think for the long haul he's done in both franchises. Before we move away from this though, who would you have in who is the actor you would have replace Ezra Miller as the Flash?
Off the top of my head, I don't really have someone, because the anytime someone asks these questions, what I don't want is an A-lister. We got a ton of people. Trav Max in the chat said maybe Tom Holland could play the Flash, and that'd be a great mm-hmm. choice 5 years ago if yeah. he hadn't been cast as Spider-Man. But you can't cast Spider-Man as the Flash. That's a really yeah. bad idea on all yeah. levels. I don't like that concept at all. I don't want yeah. the same 20 people to be all these characters. So whenever it comes to any casting, I just don't want us to like shuffle around the same names from big franchise over to the other ones. So I don't have anyone that immediately comes to mind. I normally we'll dive into kind of like who are the people that are just like killing it on some prestige television that are just mm-hmm. awesome, but they mm-hmm. haven't crossed over to movies yet, or that mm-hmm. actor that showed up in something that they just stole every scene that they were in. Mm-hmm. And but it's also tough right now because we still have a TV show going. So it's just weird to be because immediately you're comparing in your yeah. mind to Grant Augustine. So I think it's just a little bit tricky to know what to do with that. A lot of people in the chat are just saying recast him. And so that seems to be where everyone's at. Nobody's saying like, no, he's awesome in the role. We got to keep him, because yeah. why would anyone feel that way?
Yeah, no, he hasn't really proven himself to be that great in the role. And like the one time he played the character, I mean, he was arguably the worst part about that movie. Well, I don't know. There were a lot of bad things in that movie. So to say he was the worst part might not be true. But I did not like him as the Flash. I know a lot of people in the chat are saying Grant Gustin, and it's really easy to go with him. But I just feel like you can't. You have to do someone different, right? Like, you can't just take the TV version and bring him over into the movie version, because then you're stuck in a situation where it's like, okay, well, which is it, part of the same continuity? It just gets really confusing.
Right. And that's the reason, same with Smallville back in the day. I don't think it makes any yeah. sense to do that. They've also written themselves into corners where I don't think it just doesn't really work to try and do yeah. it. So moving along to our next subject, real quick, we had a super chat from Kevin Hernandez, who just says, hi guys, how's your day? Thank you so much for the super chat. I'm doing good and looking forward to talking movies with everybody. And along those same lines, second subject of the day, Disney shuffles their release dates. So last week,
yeah.
Disney basically went, all right, world's on pause for 3 months. Let's just push everything back. And so yeah. Black Widow takes Eternals' spot. Eternals moves back into, what was that, Shang-Chi? Was that the one that it's taken the spot for?
Yeah, it was basically like all of the Marvel movies, like which is when their original release date. Yeah, they just shifted down one. Yeah.
And then they... Artemis Fowl is going to drop on Disney Plus. Some of us were predicting that was going to happen. Not me. Other people said it. Bunch of people predicted that was going to happen anyway. But basically, they just did a massive shift backwards. A bunch of people asked me, what do I think of that? What do I make of that? Honestly, I don't make anything of it. The whole world is being put on pause for 3 months. And that's basically, that's what it is. That's what you're seeing. They just went, okay, push it back. And so I don't have any insights or anything like that, because even in the realm of what's interesting about this, it ties into who knows what the post all of this lockdown world's going to be. But beyond that, I don't really mm-hmm. have an opinion on the shuffle. It's interesting. It's just reflecting how big of a deal yeah. all of this is. But I don't have any deep insights. Did you have anything on it?
No, I mean, you know, to me, this was just like, this was the announcement we were waiting for, because they are the studio with the most films on the slate for 2020. And that's not to say like they won't have the most films on the slate in years going forward, but it's just like, because of the amount of properties they own, that's just the way it is. And so like, moving Mulan to a July date is optimistic. We've seen other studios do stuff similar. Like Warner Brothers still hasn't moved Tenet yet. The new SpongeBob movie got moved to July as well. So they're probably anticipating that maybe there will be some sense of normalcy in July, which I think that's kind of in line with what people are predicting. But the problem is that this pandemic is just really unpredictable, and so we have no idea what's going to happen with that. As for Black Widow moving to November, makes sense. That film's going to get demolished by Bond in November, so I just really feel bad for that film. And honestly, I think all the movies coming out in November and December are going to have a really hard time making a lot of money. I think maybe like No Time to Die and Top Gun are going to kind of emerge as the front runners there, but you know, we'll see. Going back to the Disney stuff though, so like, yeah, all the Marvel movies get moved back. We did get the announcement that Captain Marvel 2 will release on July 8th 2022, which we did not know prior to that. So that's,
they,
you know,
they tried to squeeze some new positive, like, no, it's definitely on the calendar, but it's okay, it's
yeah it's, you know, it I'm like, okay, well, duh. Like, yeah, I mean, the sequel is going to happen eventually. So, yeah, 2022 makes sense. What's interesting, though, is that so 20th Century moved Free Guy to December, which is great. The movie's going to make a ton of money. Well, maybe we'll make a ton of money there. But Spielberg's West Side Story and Ridley Scott's The Last Duel are still holding their December 18th and December 25th release dates. Do you think that those projects hit those release dates?
Which two did you say?
Spielberg's West Side Story and then Ridley Scott's The Last Duel with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Especially with so many summer blockbusters getting dropped in November and December, I think West Side Story is good counter programming. You think to Greatest Showman from 2-3 years back, that debuted horribly and then just killed it with legs. Like, as soon as people saw that movie, my wife went to go, like, took her literally 5 weeks straight. She took a new friend every week to see The Greatest Showman. And I think West Side Story absolutely could have that exact sort of thing of the musical crowd that doesn't necessarily rush out opening weekend, but they just eat that stuff up. It's going to do really well.
Yeah.
The other one, I think they just need to clear out. Like, it's going to be so crowded with tentpole films that you got to get out of there.
Yeah, and normally I would agree with you, but I think that because, like, we're in a weird situation where there's going to be a lot of blockbusters opening alongside indie films, and I think some of these films have to make a run at award season, right? And so for 20th Century, both West Side Story and The Last Duel are technically prestige pictures, so, like, I can see them still going forward with that, especially with Ridley Scott's film. And I don't think it's a matter of them not being finished by the time that they're released, because this is Spielberg and Ridley Scott. They're both known to perform cinematic miracles like under a time crunch. So I do think that those two are going to hit their release dates. It should be noted that like some other movies missing from that report were like Antlers, the personal history of David Copperfield, that Amy Adams film Woman in the Window, and then, you know, New Mutants, which I don't even know what's going on with that movie anymore. and then the last thing I'll say is that they also put in something in there about Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Like, they're saying, oh, so that's not going to come out until 2022.
Jeffrey Vlogs YouTube asked, when does Indiana Jones 5 come out? It's 2022. They announced that it is getting pushed back when Harrison Ford will be 80. So I think we've said this before. We're not sure it's happening.
I agree with you. And listen, another Indiana Jones film will happen. It's not like, I cannot possibly imagine an Indiana Jones 5 with an 80-year-old Harrison Ford.
Right.
Just reboot the damn thing or just tell another story after Last Crusade or something like that. Get a new director, get a new actor, I've been saying this ever since I rewatched The Rocketeer, but like, get Joe Johnston in there to make another indie film with like God, I literally anyone, just anyone who could play Indiana Jones. Lucasfilm does not know how to handle that property, and it frustrates me.
So moving on to something kind of tied to all of this, the trickle down from closing down movie theaters is starting to have consequences. The reports are saying that AMC Theaters is going to run out of cash in a couple of months, and it's before theaters open back up. And so there's heavy rumors AMC Theaters, the largest movie theater chain in the world, is going to have to file bankruptcy. Which, superficially, obviously, that's really, really scary bad news. Reading the articles, it sounded like it's not unprecedented. Like, movie theaters have long made mistakes. So apparently there was a big incident that happened between 1999-2001 where like 4 or 5 theater chains that are still working, still operating, filed bankruptcy. And so the headline makes it sound like AMC is going to disappear in 2 months. It's not that bad yet. But perhaps it could get there at some point in time. So what did you have any particular insights on AMC potentially filing bankruptcy?
Yeah, I mean, because I think the big thing is that they put out a statement, right, saying that, like, oh, we're not going to pay rent, right? Isn't that, like, where this whole thing stemmed from?
They did. They sent out, like, a whole letter, and it's, like, public. You can read it where they've already sent out a letter saying, we are not going to pay rent this next month. You've gotten your last rent check from AMC because we have no money coming in, and we have no money. So, sorry. So,
yeah,
that's bad.
It's terrible, but also it's just like, well, duh. I think a lot of landlords and people who lease these spaces and whatnot, I think they're going to be really, or not really, but they're going to be pretty lenient on like when like institutions and other businesses are going to be able to pay rent, because like this isn't an issue that is exclusively affecting theaters. I mean, it's especially affecting theaters because they literally make their money on people going out into the public to view something. But like other small businesses who rely on you know, people pay rent month to month and whatnot, like they're also affected by this. And so I feel like something's going to happen where like either a law is passed or sorry, not a law, but a bill is passed or whatever. Something's going to happen where there's going to be like a rent freeze or something like that. Cause I can't,
right.
I mean, AMC, they could file for bankruptcy, but like there's just so many things that kind of come along with that.
Right.
What might happen, I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this. What might happen is like an investor comes along and kind of pulls them out, like an Amazon or someone like that, which it's looking more and more likely. Like that might be the case. Like one of these big tech companies might just like snatch up the theater chains.
And you think suddenly Amazon gets into the theater business and they have AMC. How, like, you start playing that out of someone that powerful has that much distribution power of both a streaming service that they have control of and theaters. That gets interesting very quickly. But, it's in light of the reason all of this is happening. There's, of course, a history that leads to, I believe the article said that AMC Theaters had like $6.5 billion in debt, like a ton of debt. That's the big issue here. So that's past mismanagement or past living on the edge of sanity. But the other side to it is they didn't shut down. The government shut them down. The pandemic did, in which case it's not the same thing as just we're in trouble. And that's like you said, I think government could kind of step in to kind of help some of this stuff just a little bit. Had a couple super chats come in. One from Random Movie Reviewer says, Eddie Redmayne for The Flash. And maybe I could see it. I haven't seen him do kind of fun, charismatic so much. I haven't seen a ton of his stuff. But it's interesting. And then the other one, and then it said, all right, rest in peace, Honor Blackman. So I thought that one would be that.
The actress who played Pussy Galore in Goldfinger. She just passed away the other day. Huge, huge loss. She was a real trailblazer and like her legacy, not only in the Bond franchise, but in cinema, just like cinematic history, will not be forgotten. I was really sad to see that the other day.
Right. And you stop and think about it. All of the actors that were in all the Connery films, no matter how old they were, they're in an age where they could be dying soon. And you, that's when you have those thoughts in life where you go,
yeah,
this is going to get a little bit sad moving forward. One more super chat, and then we'll move on to our other subjects. Austin Stovall said, Sean, similar to how you rank the MCU franchises, could you rank all of the iconic horror franchises? That's a good idea. That's something that maybe I'll do that in the near future, of rank all of the iconic big horror franchises and give me a top ones. That is a good idea. Mm-hmm. That could happen in the very near future. Thank you much for the suggestion. Next one on here. We got our first trailer for Extraction yesterday.
Yes.
So if you guys don't know what Extraction is, and you probably don't, it's a Netflix original film. Netflix is not known for being particularly good at marketing their stuff and letting you know out there. But as soon as I tell you what this is, you'll immediately get more interested. So it's a Netflix original starring Chris Hemsworth, Thor himself, and it's written by Joe Russo of the Russo brothers. So one half of Endgame, Infinity War, these masterminds wrote the script for it. Both of them are producing it. And then it's being directed by basically one of these longtime stunt coordinators, second unit directors that he was the stunt coordinator for Civil War, Endgame, Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2, The Accountant. And so he's been working with these top directors, and like he's partnered up with like one half of the John Wick crew, the one that went on to kind of start directing movies besides John Wick films. Like he's working with him, doing second unit work with him. And now he's partnered up with the Russos and Chris Hemsworth. And it's this movie where Chris Hemsworth is this mercenary guy going in to rescue this drug lord's son and get him out of a city. And then all hell breaks loose as he's trying to get out. And the action in it looks phenomenal. And yeah. I mean, this is the best action I've seen Hemsworth do just in the, like this 2 minute trailer. This is the, like, I mean, he's obviously Thor, but he legitimately is one of the biggest leading men in Hollywood. I mean, he's like 6'4", 230 or whatever he is, big, strong guy. And normally he's got a hammer, and so it's all CGI, but here you're seeing him like practical stunt work. The quality of what you saw in the John Wick movies, well shot, pummeling these guys. You're seeing bridges explode. And I've been binge playing through the Uncharted games. And the way this is shot, if you've played the Uncharted games, it plays like all these action sequences I've been doing in the urban setting stuff in Uncharted, like jumping from rooftops. They're doing that. And it looks like a very cool action movie made for adults. What did you think about it? You made a positive noise when I mentioned it.
Yeah, no, I ate this trailer up, man. Like, this is exactly what I want, like, at the end of April or something like that. And I think, like, this film is positioned to do even better than what it might have done. Like, this film could very easily just, like, dropped, not gotten a lot of buzz, really just, like, come and went. But, like, now, because of what's happening, everyone's stuck inside, I think it's going to do really well. This is exactly the kind of film people want to see right now. And I completely agree.
A clickable movie. Sometimes we talk about them when it comes to these Netflix ones that you get on Netflix and there's just like a trailer with some actor and some concept. I think every guy my age is going to get on there and they see Chris Hemsworth with the way those action shots were staged. And then it says from the Russo brothers, they're not going to think about it. They're just going to think it's directed by the Russos, not realizing and they're just going to eat it up. Same with like the way that was
21 Bridges with
21 Bridges. Everyone thought that the Russos directed it, except, if that went and dropped on Netflix, would have been way more watched because Chadwick Boseman crime little thriller film. That's what people click on. They don't necessarily go out and buy a ticket. And so right now when we're all locked at home, you can even look at like over the last couple of months, Netflix has added what's trending and like Bloodfather, this very small Mel Gibson movie from 3 years ago that made no money at the box office. It might not have even gone into the theaters. I don't even remember. Very small release got put on Netflix. And so then you just see kind of like Mel Gibson shooting people in the face, and like it was trending in the top 10 movies of all the things on there, these Disney movies and big wide releases. This small little action movie did well. And now you think, let's change that up. And now it's a new Chris Hemsworth with awesome action. I think this is going to eat it up. And I really hope that this director guy is as good as this trailer makes him out to be. With this,
yeah, like I do too.
With what's happened with the John Wick guys, of in such a short period of time, one of them becomes the prestige guy for doing the John Wick films. The other one goes off and does Deadpool 2 and Fast and the Furious. And this might be another guy in that trend of kind of using the stunt coordinators, second unit directors to just launch these guys immediately into being great action directors. That could be, I love that stuff, because they're the guys doing the best action these days. And
yeah, I agree.
It looks like this could be that once again.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The action is like super visceral, intense. Get a little bit of definitely some John Wick 3 vibes in there, of him trying to like escape the city, but then also like some, and by no means does it like 100% resemble this, but like a little bit of Black Hawk Down vibes of them trying to get out of a really like troubled area and survive. I just think like, it's got the ticking clock factor. It's got the intensity. It's got Chris Hemsworth at the lead. Obviously, he's going to form some sort of a relationship with this kid. And so there's going to be an emotional element.
Right. There's a lot of emotion to it. I think that's the one that kind of even popped a little bit, because the action, you're like right there. But there's also like, you know, Chris Hemsworth, this is a guy that can really act. And sometimes we forget that like a little bit, because he's so known for, being Thor. And we get no charismatic, funny. But like this is that some of that Infinity War broken hero guy that, man, I hadn't watched it until you kind of, 20 minutes before we started this. And I was like, man, this is the stuff I want Netflix doing. This is the stuff that gets me excited on multiple levels of more movies like this made. They don't do well in the theater. And then testing out a new director and letting, you know, Russo's have a little bit of fun with something. So many different things about this are just a whole lot of fun to me. Real quick question. Yeah. We had a super chat before moving on to our next subject. Danny K Review says, best celebrity crush. Mine is Daenerys Targaryen of Game of Thrones. How about for you, Griffin, on this one?
Me? I think these days it's like Alexandra Daddario. I really like her. And then when I was younger, it was like Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, so some of the classic ones for me, Drew Barrymore, Jennifer Garner, a couple of those ones that from back in the day, as you can imagine, I'm a little bit on the older side. So next subject on here, South by Southwest is headed to Amazon. So if you guys don't know, South by Southwest is a film festival that takes place in Austin, where I live. Last year, Griffin actually came to Austin to attend it. That's the first time I met Griffin in real life. We've been YouTube friends for about 3 years. Griffin actually came to town for South by Southwest, and we went to go see Captain Marvel together. It's a lot of fun. And then we were supposed to be at it 2 weeks ago when it was supposed to happen. He was going to come to town. We actually had rented a place together and everything. And then, of course, in light of everything happening in the world, it got canceled. So that didn't happen. And so people have been trying to figure out, what are they going to do with South by Southwest? And then it was announced that South by Southwest has partnered up with Amazon to do like this online film festival. I think the short answer, what film festivals are really for is giving exposure to smaller films, to find a way to get them to someone to see their stuff, because they're independent filmmakers. And so in that regard, this was like, so many people were scared that they were just screwed because no one's going to see their movie. A friend of mine was acted in a movie that was going to debut at South by Southwest. And when it was South by Southwest canceled, he was like, oh man, I'm not going to get to see my movie on the big screen. And so I think this is an opportunity for people to actually get to see this stuff. How about you?
Yeah, I'm conflicted, because like, it says that they're going to pay the filmmakers in there, but it doesn't say how much they're going to pay the filmmakers. And I just have a hard time believing that filmmakers who have spent years of their lives maybe less, maybe more or whatever on a project, and we're hoping to unveil it to the world in a theater in front of like hundreds of, or thousands of people. I have a hard time believing that they're going to sacrifice that to just put it on Amazon for free. Because like, here's the thing. So South by Southwest is partnering up with Amazon, and Amazon is removing the paywall for Prime Video, and they're saying, hey, you don't have to have a Prime account. You can just go watch these films on Amazon Prime for free. So like, great initiative, great way to kind of like help these people who had projects that were set to premiere at South by Southwest. But like, I don't know if it's the right move. Like, I think you saw like John Bernthal had a film that was going to premiere at South by Southwest. And I think they put out a statement that said like, oh, we're not going to put it straight to video or let it premiere at the online film festival because it was designed to be seen in front of as many people as possible. We want to have a proper theatrical experience. And I just wonder, you know, if none of the big films that were set to premiere there are going to, you know, drop online via this online festival, I have to wonder how many are going to really be on there. Maybe some like shorts and stuff. I don't know. I think good intentions, but ultimately it's a little dicey. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Well, and I think that also goes to with these film festivals, there's a very broad group of people that try to get in. Like John Bernthal being like, yeah, well, my movie is meant to be seen in a theater is not the same thing as my buddy that lives in Austin that, yeah, you know, they leveraged all their credit cards to get this movie made. And so, I think there's a difference there. Those are two very different things.
Right. Well, and I think it also it depends on how much Amazon is going to pay these filmmakers to have their films on there for like the duration of however long they're doing it. Because like if they're not paying them a lot, then like that's kind of an issue. But like if they're paying them like a substantial amount to have their film on there for like a week, yeah, it becomes a little more enticing. Have you heard from your friend who was supposed to be in that? Like, does he know whether his film's going to premiere online?
I haven't heard about that. They had an Austin premiere. So because it was made in Austin, they've had all these ties to the Alamo Draft House. And so theirs actually did get, but before everything shut down, they did their own little deal here in Austin. So I think he did get to see his movie. For reviews are out there. One of the fun things is he was actually kind of called out, I believe, like Variety's review for it. They mentioned him name as a standout. His name, Vincent Prendergast. He's one of my oldest friend going back to the third grade, best man in my wedding, and very even crucial in me getting on certain press lists and everything. Lifelong friend, movie lover, and he does actually, you know, I review stuff. He actually tries to act and does on the that side of things. So they did get something, but I haven't heard about this side to things.
So. Yeah. No, I'd be interested to see if his film ends up premiere. What's the name of the movie he's in?
I'd gotta look at it. I'd have to look at it.
Well, it's like might as well just give him a shout out here. You know, we're talking about
him, if you keep talking about South by Southwest. Tell us your thoughts on it real quick and I'll look this up.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, like, it's I'll be curious to see what happened. So they did something when the festival was announced. They had something called like a screening room, and there were some smaller films, some other indies and what other like documentaries and stuff that were supposed to premiere at South by Southwest that ended up going to the screening room. The problem was that there weren't a whole lot of movies on there, right? And the films that were on there, you know, and no disrespect to the people involved with them, but they weren't like the most enticing or films that, like, right, people were really looking to review or stuff like
that was a bit of the problem with the lineup.
I'm almost worried that it'll be a similar situation to that Portal.
I mean, that's kind of the situation with this lineup. We mentioned this before it started and before it's canceled. We weren't crazy about the lineup in general. The movie's called The Carnivores. I did actually know the name of it. I just didn't want to say it wrong, so I looked up. It is called The Carnivores. It's pretty cool that, like, he was singled out by Variety as one of the standouts. And so he was pretty cool. Actually, we went when the last movie that we saw in the theater before everything shut down, the Vin Diesel one, Bloodshot, we're sitting there.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in the row behind me, and someone like three seats over, it goes, hey, Vincent, I saw your new movie, The Carnivores, and you just did a great job or standout. It's pretty crazy. Like, we're just in the theater, my friend's getting recognized for movie critics and, like, great job acting in that movie. And as I say that, it makes my life sound a little bit more interesting than it actually is. It's not that interesting. I'm telling you my one story where that's happened. But moving along, next subject on here, we got a couple more, two updates on some stuff that happened with writer situations. One of the writers from Rick and Morty has signed on to do the next pass on Ant-Man 3. So a couple of different things that are exciting. It makes it more tangible. We are getting an Ant-Man 3. Sometimes they were talking about it, but as soon as you have a writer with the MCU, it's happening. It is happening. Mm-hmm. Whereas stuff with Star Wars, they announce new writers, directors all the time, and who knows what's going to happen. But when it comes to MCU, this thing's going to happen. I've never seen an episode of Rick and Morty, so I don't know. I mean, that doesn't move the needle at all. I don't know. I can't make anything of that. People talk about it all the time. People are like, what? You haven't seen it? You got to watch this show. I just haven't. So, I don't have thoughts. Have you seen Rick and Morty? What do you think about this?
I have seen Rick and Morty. I'm not the biggest fan of the show, but the writer of Rick and Morty doing an Ant-Man film is really exciting for many reasons. One, there's a lot of time travel and just like kind of wacky, like cosmic sort of stuff involved. Not cosmic per se, but just like, I guess you could call it like quantum realm kind of stuff involved in that show. And so I think that fits perfectly with someone who's going to do an Ant-Man movie. Also, the Ant-Man movies are comedic and they're not like slapstick comedic, they're kind of witty comedic, and so like the humor in Rick and Morty is like there is slapstick humor in there, but it's also like really clever, really well written, and so like I feel like that fits perfectly with an Ant-Man film. Listen, if you guys follow me at all or you know me at all, I am probably the biggest defender of the Ant-Man films out there. Like the original Ant-Man film and Ant-Man and the Wasp are probably in my like top 6 MCU films. Like, I adore those movies, and the fact that we're getting a third one makes me so excited. Just give me more Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas and all the crew. Maybe we get some, I don't know, Fantastic Four teases and an Ant-Man 3. That could be possible, and that would be really exciting. But this makes me happy because it lets me know that they're moving forward with an Ant-Man 3 when we didn't know if it was going to happen before now.
Right. Yeah. What I've always kind of said about the Ant-Man movies is that they're the MCU going for a double and getting it. When people say that, oh, they're just bland, and we've had some people in the comment sections just saying they're bland, so they're excited because Rick and Morty will make it less bland. I
kind of see where they're coming from with that, because like there's a lot of style in like Flash with like Rick and Morty, and like the people who have the mind to create something like that insane and that beloved, tackling an Ant-Man film, it will be like Taika Waititi jumping on board Thor and like completely just like bringing it to another level. The problem is that's just the writers, not necessarily the directors. Like, Peyton Reed is still going to direct it.
Right.
And I will defend him. I think he's a great choice for those movies. But, like, you know, maybe him paired with this writer will give Ant-Man, it'll take it to the next level. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, they're the movies they're trying to be inside the MCU. If you want everything to be this big, massive, save the universe movie, okay, then sure, they're the boring, bland ones that just don't have big enough stakes. Fair enough. Okay. But, I don't think they all should be that. You should have the epic ones, and then you should have some that are smaller in scale. Ant-Man, by nature, makes sense to be smaller in scale. And also, it could be fun if we just... if this one goes wilder, bonkers, crazy, and they experiment, cool. Now, all of that works for me, but I've enjoyed them, and I don't mind if they go weirder. This is all, they're obviously experimenting, trying all sorts of new stuff, and I think because of Endgame, you're probably going to get a pretty good little bump for Ant-Man. It had been Ant-Man. What is this? And so people didn't check them out because he hadn't been real. Besides one scene in Civil War, hadn't been in the huge ones. So they were the least viewed. But then he's such a great part of Endgame, and I think that'll give you a big boost. People will want more of that, and so it'll be a nice improvement there. But as I said, I can't comment specifically on these writers except to say, if it's going to make things weirder and trippier, hey, I don't mind if we head in that direction.
Yeah, I just want them, like, and they kind of did this with the second film. I really just want them to embrace their comic roots. Like, like Ant-Man and the Wasp felt like that, like, golden age, like, 60s Ant-Man comic, like, come to life. It was packed full of color, a lot of great energy to it, and they started really diving into the quantum realm, which is part of what makes the Ant-Man stories, like, super, just, like, fun and wacky, along with, like, tackling Hank Pym's demons, which is very important. I think if they double down on that on the third one, we're going to get something that's just like super fun and out there.
Right. So in just a few minutes, we got one more subject. We'll take some questions from you guys at the end of this. If you want to start putting those in there or adding a super chat, got one more subject at hand. And we just had a super chat come in from Random Movie Reviews, said Zac Efron as the Flash. He hasn't had a superhero property, so I don't hate the idea. I guess did they say he's kind of associated with some Marvel stuff? I think they had big discussions. I don't remember if that was confirmed or not.
I think there were like discussions like him maybe being like, this could be completely wrong, like Adam Warlock.
That's what I heard, but I don't think that's been confirmed. And so, you know, him as the Flash, you know, he can do charming, kind of hyperactive stuff. So maybe I don't hate the idea. Yeah. Can I buy him as a like investigator, like as a super smart investigator guy? I'm not quite sure if he can do buy him that side of it. What about you? What do you think about him as...
He has the charisma, he has the personality to do it. I'm honestly, and this might be really unpopular, I want them to go with an unknown. I want them to go with someone who like hasn't been attached to a big franchise yet. Like, let this be their big breakout role.
That's not always my position. That's pretty much always what my default is. I want us to stop looking at the same 20 people. We keep going to the same list, and then either we're like, you know, even some people mentioned, what if they got Chris Evans? Captain America.
I think it's terrible casting.
I don't think he lines up like the hyperactive personality. That's who he was 15 years ago. It's not who he is now. So there's a lot of problems. But more so, I just don't like that we just keep kind of looking at the exact same group of people. The other side of this question, they asked, have the Bond rankings been delayed? Yeah, they're meant to lead up to the new release. So the new release isn't for 6 months. So the Bond rankings won't be for 6 months.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what's going on with that. Final subject of the day before we dive into some of your questions. We have a new writer on the Obi-Wan series. I saw some headlines presenting this as Obi-Wan is back on. And I was like, it wasn't really ever canceled. They just like said they wanted to work on the scripts a little bit. And it's Joby Harold. Yeah. He was a producer on Edge of Tomorrow and John Wick 3. He was the writer on the King Arthur movie from a couple years ago, and he wrote the script for the new Zack Snyder zombie movie that comes out on Netflix later this year. So I look at his resume. I don't see it as a fit, like just on the surface. He doesn't have enough writing credits for me to know what to make of him. So he's just one of these names that I go, okay, he's been working in Hollywood for like 10 years, seems to have some good connections. People seem to like him.
Yeah,
but I just don't know. I can't get excited about this because I go, okay, he produced Edge of Tomorrow, which I really liked, but producing is not the same thing as writing. And then the things that he has written, one of them is a movie I didn't think was great, and the other one is one that I haven't seen yet. And neither one of them are obvious, like, oh yeah, Star Wars movie. So
this news didn't really excite me at all. I was kind of like, oh okay, all right, well, you have another writer attached. Let's see what he can do. I mean, like, ever since like Craig Mazin did Chernobyl, I've like kind of just withheld judgment from writers tackling new projects. But like, if we are judging him based on his resume, I don't think this is really a great choice. I know he's working on the Zack Snyder one. What was the other film that he wrote?
The King Arthur, the Guy Ritchie King Arthur.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's for as much as I will kind of defend that movie, the biggest problem with it was the screenwriting. So like, that doesn't make me the most confident in what like he's going to do with an Obi-Wan series. I don't know. It's kind of a weird choice. I'd rather they would have went with someone a little bit more inspired. So
I think part of it that also, when you can play the comparison game, and you go, who did they get for The Mandalorian? They got Jon Favreau, who you're a little bit, you call him the company man. I'm a much bigger fan of his than you are. And so they got the guy that did Iron Man, Elf. I mean, very good with technology. And so that's the caliber to kick off that show. And then they get the guy that did King Arthur for Obi-Wan.
Well, okay, but the director from The Mandalorian is it Deborah Chow? Or is it she is technically the person in charge of Obi-Wan, which that gets me really excited because I loved her episodes of The Mandalorian.
It's where it's tough it's for just, me though, but because television is a writer's game. On when it comes to TV shows, it's the showrunner, it's the writers that really kind of set things. And you know, that's where you see like Alan Taylor was a legendary Game of Thrones director, and then he makes Thor the Dark World and Terminator Genesis. And so, like, TV show directors, I can't get as excited as I would like to. If it was showrunner of Mandalorian is also doing, I'd be like, oh, cool, I'm on board. But when it's director of the best episodes, I go, she did direct great episodes, but it's not the same thing when it comes to television.
Well, I'm a little confused why Dave Filoni doesn't have his hand in this project. Like he's really the master when it comes to Star Wars, not just television. I think he's telling the most interesting stories in Star Wars right now.
His episodes of The Mandalorian?
Yes, I did. But like similar to what you were talking about, that was from a directing standpoint. I thought they were like poorly directed and very much like. It came from a first-time director, but like when it comes to story and just like screenwriting and whatnot, like he's the guy, man. Like he is the closest thing we have to George Lucas involved at Lucasfilm right now, and I would like for him to be involved as many Star Wars projects as possible. So why would you not tap him to kind of co-write with whoever you are getting the screen? Write this Obi-Wan series. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe they are doing that, but it just kind of feels weird, like why they haven't said he's involved.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's somewhat been the, maybe for years, people have been like, give Filoni a live action, like let him really do something.
Yeah.
And then once again, they don't. You're like, what exactly is going on here? Because it's a little bit, I'd agree with you. Very strange that they haven't done more to, give Filoni the thing that seems pretty obvious that they should. If there's someone to take a chance on, maybe that's the way to phrase it. If you're going to take a chance on someone, why wouldn't you take a chance on the person that a whole generation of Star Wars fans love because of the Clone Wars? Why wouldn't you do it? Obvious.
And like, I understand not giving him a. Oh, whoops, sorry. You cut out a little bit there. I didn't.
I just say, why wouldn't you take a chance on him?
No, well, exactly. And I feel like I can understand not giving him a theatrical film like right off the bat.
Right.
But like, you know, he's had a few episodes in The Mandalorian. They weren't so great. So he's like, you know, he's still cutting he's sinking his teeth into like directing a little bit. He's still getting the feel for it. A lot of his stuff does feel like it's literal translation from animation to live action. So maybe with a few more episodes under his belt in The Mandalorian season 2, then they can talk about maybe giving him a film or something like that. Because when it comes, like, I know I just said this, but like when it comes to story and understanding Star Wars, there's literally no one else out there who is better than Dave Filoni.
Right. And like I said, he's like loved by a generation. And he's done something. And so if you're going to take a risk on someone, he's just the obvious one that you take. You give him the chance because you're always taking a risk. And I don't know. Straight. And so maybe there's something going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Maybe they are working on a movie with him or something like that. But I would agree that would be the direction that they should do things. If you're listening on the audio version, we're going to close things out right now. Thank you guys so much for watching or listening. If you're listening to the audio version, you're listening. If you're doing the video version, we're going to keep on going for a little bit longer, take some of your questions. But on the audio version, be sure to click that rating button. Give us a score over there. And we'll be back next week with more movie talk with whatever's going on in the world movie news. We'll keep talking.